Well, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee has asked us to reflect this morning on communities under particular threat because of religion or race. And this assignment caused me, in my own mind, to think about a story of a woman who was a member of my previous congregation. My congregation when I was serving as a minister in Bethesda, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C. Her name is Yuka Yasi Fujikura. She is a committed Unitarian Universalist. And 75 years ago, Yuka was a United States citizen, and she was imprisoned for the crime of being a Japanese American. In November of 2015, she was interviewed by the New York Times about the experience, and she said, "To judge someone by their ethnicity or their religion was wrong then, and it's wrong today, too." Born in 1927 in Oregon, Yuka was 14 years old, and in her first year of high school, in December of 1941, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. Her father was a highly respected businessman, an important community leader, and one of the most successful apple fruit growers in the state of Oregon. He was the first Japanese person to be elected to the board of directors of the Hood River Valley Fruit Growers Association. Within the Japanese community, he provided legal and financial advice and help. Often he acted as a translator and an advocate when his fellow immigrants needed the services of the white community, and he assisted many of his fellow immigrants in purchasing land of their own. 6 days after the outbreak of the war, he was arrested by FBI agents and charged with being a potentially dangerous enemy alien. He lost all of his property except a fragment of an orchard and was imprisoned for 5 years from December 1941 to January 1946. His son, Yuka's brother, who was born in 1916, was a young lawyer, and he was one of the few Japanese Americans who fought laws that directly targeted Japanese Americans. He was arrested in March of 1942 for violating a curfew order that only applied to Japanese Americans. If you're a Japanese American in Portland, Oregon, out after about 8 in the evening, you could be arrested. He fought the order in court, lost, and was sent to solitary confinement in a federal prison. In May of 1942, Yuka was interred with her mother and her brother. This was her younger brother. By then, her older brother and father were in prison. Yuka and her mother and brother were sent to the Tula Lake War Relocation Center in California, sent in a train that all the Japanese in Hood River were told to board, and then all the windows were covered with tar paper so they could not see outside and no sunlight could come in. And they traveled for 2 days on this train, not knowing where they were going. Yuka said, "When you're 14 years old and somebody says, 'Oh, you're going to be shipped to a camp,' in my head I envisioned something like a campfire or a Girl Scout camp." At Tula Lake, Yuka lived in a tar-papered dwelling, and the walls between the units did not go all the way up to the ceiling so everyone could hear what was going on in the neighboring dwellings. The communal toilets and showers did not have doors. After 10 months in Tallulah Lake Camp, Yuka and her brother were able to move to Denver, leaving their mother behind. Yuka graduated from high school in Denver in 1944 in the top ranks of her class. She wanted to go to college, but she did not want to be a financial burden to her family. She decided the University of Oregon would be her best option, as she was still an Oregon resident and eligible for in-state tuition. The West Coast was still forbidden territory for Japanese Americans, but Yuka was determined and she petitioned to be admitted. The university sent her a letter warning that she could return at her own risk. As the first Japanese American student to return to the University of Oregon, she was met with hostility and unfriendliness, especially because her father was still in federal prison. After the war, Yuka's father got out of prison and the family settled in Portland, Oregon, where her dad turned his energy to helping fellow evacuees return to their homes and their lives, providing legal and financial counsel and advice. He began to teach classes to help his fellow Japanese men and women, many now in their 60s and 70s, prepare for citizenship. He was one of the first to pass the tests and became a naturalized American citizen at the age of 66. After graduating from the University of Oregon in 1948, Yuka applied to Yale for a master's program in public health nursing. She received her master's degree from Yale University in 1951, and then received a Fulbright scholarship to study public health in Japan. In Japan, she married and started a family and then moved back to Portland. About 10 years later, she earned her second master's degree in public health, and her husband accepted a position in Hiroshima. Yuka divided her time between her home in Japan and in Maryland, where she became a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church, the church that I served in Bethesda. She became an active volunteer with the Washington, D.C. area Planned Parenthood program, working primarily with underprivileged young girls. So today, when I hear about putting people in camps because of their religion or because of where they were born, I think of Yuka. In her 2015 interview with the New York Times, she reflected on the current backlash against Syrian refugees. She said, "To judge someone by their ethnicity or their religion was wrong then, and it's wrong today." What really disturbed her was when the mayor of Roanoke, a Democrat, suggested that barring Syrian refugees was prudent in light of the Japanese internment. He said, "It appears that the threat of harm to America from ISIS now is just as real and serious as that from our enemies then." For Yuka, the idea of barring Syrian refugees was a reminder of the days when the government forcibly removed Japanese Americans from their farms, boarded up their businesses, put them on trains with the blinds drawn, and shuttled them to remote prisons where they were held behind barbed wire and under the watch of armed guards. So today, many of us have a great concern about the fear of Islam getting out of control, the plans to build a bigger wall on the border with Mexico. We fear that our country may be heading down a grimly familiar path. And in response, some churches across the United States are declaring themselves sanctuary churches, doing what they can to support communities that they feel are under siege. However, Theodore Parker, the Unitarian minister, said, and this was later picked up by Martin Luther King, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Consider Yucca's older brother, the man who was arrested for violating the curfew and put in solitary confinement. He was released in 1944, and he moved to Denver after he was released from prison. He passed the Colorado bar exam with one of the highest scores that year, but was denied admission to the bar because of his criminal conviction for violating the 1942 curfew in Oregon. With the help of the ACLU, he was finally admitted to the Colorado bar in 1946. In Denver, he's remembered today locally as a tireless fighter for civil rights. He is best known as the executive director of the Denver Commission on Community Relations from 1967 until 1983. Nationally, and especially within the Japanese community, he's best known as one of only three persons who challenged the 1942 executive order that led to the imprisonment of 120,000 people of Japanese heritage in internment camps during World War II. He died in 1986, but he's not forgotten. So in November of 2015, Yucca got an invitation. Her whole extended family was invited to go to the White House. Let's watch.